time for Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires. It's live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Welcome to Newsmakers. Thank you for that holiday beginning.
You're listening to put you in the mood Brent after
Dave.
The look on your face when you came in is just priceless.
Are you implying that I have a red nose and I perhaps drank too much last night? This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. We are on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN on this beautiful hump day. There was a ton of rain last night throughout the valley. I know I woke up and had to put on the galoshes to even get to my truck. So, but, you know, I can't really complain about too much rain this year. How was your roads and streets getting?
Pretty much the same. Yeah. Downpours.
So coming over on Highway 22, I noticed, and there's a divider there. We're close to the bridge. The cars going the opposite direction are hitting the water in the gutters on the side.
Sure.
And it is splashing over the divide.
Yeah, that happens on I-5 too.
Like up and over the divide, like a little wave coming out of the people driving the other way. It's crazy. All right. Hey, listeners, thank you for being here. The Newsmakers has been broadcasting for a little bit now, and we want your feedback. 503-393-1430 is the call-in line. Things you'd like to hear us talk about, things we'd like to cover, local events, local initiatives, local individuals, local ideas. Anything that affects the quality of life here in the Mid-Willamette Valley for Salem and Kaiser. So 503 is another digit there. 503-393-1430.
There you go.
All right. So we'll repeat that number because we love to hear from you and see how the show's going and which guests we haven't had on yet that you would like to. Speaking of which, Dave.
Brent.
We have some incredible guests coming up in the weeks to follow.
Excellent.
So... I have the good fortune to be able to try to find people that that are involved in things that I think are critical to the area that people may not know a lot about.
Sure.
Okay. So I've invited on some county commissioners.
Always good.
Craig Pope from Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
Pope from Polk County. He'll be on.
Say that three times fast.
Of course, that includes all of West Salem, Independence, Monmouth, Dallas. We'll have him on tomorrow. I believe tomorrow. And we're going to have Kurt Arthur, SVN Commercial Real Estate, will be on to talk about what is going on in the commercial business world in terms of who's moving into Salem, things he can and cannot talk about, who's leasing up what buildings are being bought, and what the occupancy and vacancy rates are, and things like that. That should be an interesting conversation. We've got Kathy Goss coming on a week after next, and she's on the Salem-Kaiser School Board. And Kathy is always entertaining. She's never shy of opinion.
Oh, good.
At all.
We like
She's
that.
A former candidate, House candidate. And Kathy will talk about the Salem-Kaiser School Board and then what she sees happening and what's going on in the future. And to get the flip side, we haven't booked it yet, but I would like to have the superintendent in as well.
Oh,
sometimes
absolutely.
The superintendent is going to give you a different view than the policymaker.
Yes.
So a lot of good things coming up. If there are things that you would like us to talk about and guests you'd like to have us in. Now, we're going to cover news. We're going to cover politics, business, quality of life, things, initiatives, nonprofits. So let your voice be heard. You can email the station at KYKN, Dave at KYKN.
Yes. Right?
Or you can call us 503-393-1430. Today... we have a lot of events to talk about. The governor released her budget and priorities for the next coming session and biennium. So there's interesting things there.
What does the governor want?
Well, she wants more taxpayer money, of course.
As if she doesn't get enough.
You know, it would be nice if I'm the governor. Mm-hmm. I would like to be disliked less.
That's a good one.
I would like to not be known as the do-nothing governor.
New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think in 4 years, she's going to have a lot to do to have a legacy that says, hey, I did something. I made a difference. And that's positive for Oregon.
That would be number one on my list.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, make a positive impact on the state. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, and here's the thing about the governor race. And we're not talking too many partisan politics here in the noon hour, but if I'm Bud Pierce, ran a few years back,
right,
or Newt Bueller, and I think they both did a pretty good section of this, to the voter, the question is, are the numbers going the right direction? And Bud Pierce, Dr. Pierce, did a good job of saying this thing. Look where our education numbers were in 1990. Now, how many Democratic governors have we elected? And what are our dropout rates? Mm-hmm. What are our teen pregnancy rates? What are our homeless rates? So regardless of what party you're registered in, just look at the numbers. I think I'm going to start to be more and more famous for saying, look at the numbers and do the math.
Because you're a numbers guy.
That's because I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
So what is our median income compared to Washington, compared to where we were in 1990? What is our median income per family Oregon compared to the national?
Well, what's the answer?
Well, I don't have those numbers right in front of me.
You're asking the questions without the answers.
Well, I can tell you it's going the wrong direction.
Oh.
Washington has increased greatly, and Oregon has not yet recovered from the very good paying jobs we had in more rural Oregon when we had more logging jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Logging and timber were very good paying jobs. And anyway, so the household income in Oregon versus Washington, that divide has split in these last 25 plus years. And the same with the national, and the same with, you know, where we want our education to go, the test scores and the dropout rates and so forth. It has to stop being a part of, well, I only vote for people that have D after my name, I only people that vote for R after name, and figure that out. And so,
Do you want to know?
Kitzhaber. Yeah, tell us.
All right. So the Oregon's median household income is
36,000, 38,000. What is it?
In 15, it was 60,834.
Okay.
And the U.S. median household income is 56,000. So we're higher than the national average.
Well, good. We're beating Arkansas, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, it goes back to, you know, John Kitzhaber. And I guess I'm still carrying a little bit of angst there, because he wanted to be known as the education governor, But the numbers were all going the wrong direction. And it can't just be a matter of throwing dollars at it. It has to be more solutions. It has to be some systemic changes. And I don't know what they are, but maybe Kathy Goss will know them or have some good ideas when she joins us in a couple of weeks.
Hmm.
So, do we have time to talk a little bit about the elections? Because things are settling down now. All the numbers and all the national things are being settled, and the recounts are done. So
recounts are done?
Yeah.
They finally put a stamp on it and said, this is done?
Well, I'm pretty sure.
After the break, maybe. Okay. We'll do it after the break.
All right. Well, one of the things I want to talk about today is how purple Marion and Polk County are. We're flat out purple.
Purple?
Purple.
Okay.
So we're not blue and we're not red.
Purple.
Now, we've been talking this last week or so that we kind of need another color for how out there the Salem City Council members are. That's somewhere
purple is out
beyond
there.
Blue.
Yeah.
And yet, we have Marion County and Salem and Polk County, very split voters, and a lot of races going to Republicans. So it's a pretty good mix, and we'll do some numbers here in the second part of the break. So the Oregon budget, by the way, you ask what she wants. She wants to dump a lot of money into education.
Throwing more money at it again.
More
That's
money into
not
education.
The solution.
Hey, well, I think...
I know this for a fact.
Smaller class sizes, I'll take that.
Yes, I'll take that too.
Our kids went through Salem-Keisha schools. So smaller class sizes, money into the Oregon State Police. So
that's hard, always a good thing.
It's hard to argue with that priority.
Mm-hmm.
Some affordable housing issues. Housing money,
yeah,
in terms of getting
actually need that
homes and construction. And here's the thing about that, Madam Governor. You can reduce the regulation. The regulations are killing affordable housing.
Right.
And we just went through this, and the mayor talked about it last week on our show.
Yes.
The Revenue Task Force. And one of the things that the Revenue Task Force that the City Council, Salem City Council, talked about was doing a construction excise tax. So you'd pay 1%, say, on the cost of construction of every new home, right?
Okay.
And then the next thing was, well, what are we going to do about affordable housing? And Mike Erdman, by the way, of the Home Builders Association, will be our guest. He is going to be on next week, and so he'll be an expert to talk about this. But it's one of those common sense people who just said, how can you say that affordable housing is an issue and then tax it? Affordable tax, you know. And so what is required? And he's got some great stories about how exclusionary zoning or inclusionary zoning and things like that have really skyrocketed the cost. And it's the regulations that cause it.
Always.
And then but they don't identify that what they did was their own doing.
No, they're like, we don't know what went wrong.
So make sure you're listening next week with Mike Erdman, because I'm going to force him to tell a story about what happened in Portland and affordable rental housing.
Excellent. And before we go to the break, the comparison between here and Seattle, Washington, for instance, Seattle is 21% more than Portland, and Portland's 21% above the national average. So median income in Seattle, $99,597.
Wow. All right, coming back after the break, give us a call, 503-393-1430. You're listening to Newsmakers on KYKN 1430, Salem's Listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
More Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, well, I got to get you to the holiday mood because, you know, it's bringing me down here in the studio. When you hear this song, what do you think of?
I think of my wife playing it.
Actually. Really?
Yeah.
I think of Home Alone.
Oh, yes. Home Alone. I tend to like the spiritual songs of Christmas and not so much the jingle bells myself.
Yeah, some of those are good, too. So.
A little hard to fit on a lead-in, though.
Yeah, they're a little slow.
So this is Brent DeHart, and I am here with Dave Bourne, and we're talking about local politics and trying to cheer up our situation. It's been a month since the election, a little bit more, and I just wanted to bring up how Marion and Polk County are downright purple when it comes to the voting electorate. So we have red people and we have blue people, if you want to call it the dichotomy there. And one of the most striking things, of course, Marion County has partisan county commissioners, right? Polk County has nonpartisan. Okay. Salem City Council is nonpartisan, supposedly. And we have three Republicans representing Marion County.
Wow.
Right?
That's
in Marion
good.
County, we have a very, very strong contingent of, they call themselves progressives on the Salem City Council. And I'm trying to figure out how this works and how it happened. So one of the striking things people need to realize, hey, voters, who's representing you? Of course, we have the governor, and Newt Bueller won in Marion County.
Wow, that's impressive.
Won in Polk County.
Yeah.
Kate Brown lost in the county where she lives, in the city in which she lives.
That's because they know her well.
Yeah, at any rate. So, and it's also beholden upon those who represent us to realize how split the community is in terms of who they're voting for. Newt Bueller, 49% to Kate Brown's 42.78%. 42 in Marion County. And in Polk County, what did she get? She got 41, a little under 42%. So here's an example of some Republicans in the area. Okay? So the Republicans, they're going to have a dickens of a deal in this upcoming session because they're so outnumbered and there's a super majority for the Democrats. And what that means, folks, is that the Democrats can pass any money bill, any tax bill, without not a single vote from Republicans. So it can go strictly around partisan lines, and they don't need any help. They can pass whatever they want.
Wow.
All right.
That's not good.
No, it's going to be a tough time to be a Republican in the legislature.
Yikes.
So in the Senate side, of course, we have Jackie Winters. She's a Republican. She's got to be one of the longest dedicated public servants the state has ever seen. Goes way, way back. And Peter Courtney. So those are two state senators from our area. And Peter's, of course, the Senate president and a Democrat. Kim Thatcher. She won with almost 60% of the vote. And she's a state representative, 13th district, and she's a Republican. Right?
Yeah.
So then you turn around and you've got Sherry Springer. She's a Republican, 17th district. She had 67%, two-thirds.
Wow.
So there's some people, there's some of these districts are very, very Republican. Rick Lewis is a Republican. He got over 60% of the vote. Of course, Denise Bowles was my representative until I moved recently, but she got 51% of the vote and is elected for the first time. She's in her second appointed term as fill-ins after resignations. So she beat Mike Ellison. So pretty good contingent in our region of Republicans to carry the good fight there. And then there's Paul Evans.
Oh.
And Paul Evans is in West and part of South San Antonio, a lot of Park County. Democrat, had a fierce battle with Selma Pierce, but ended up getting 52%. And Brian Clem has been in the legislature for quite some time, and he got almost 60% of the vote. So it seems to be these districts are strong on one party or the other, which is another topic in the news. And I don't know if you've seen, I'm trying to get Kevin Mannix to come on the show. So
I know Kevin.
Yeah. So
do
Kevin,
I need to make a call for you?
It's, yeah, if we do. Look at Kevin. I mean, Kevin's never shy and wanted to talk.
No, he's not.
So, and I love Kevin. So not making you fun of you there, Kevin Mannix. But I'd like to have him on the show. I actually have reached out because there'll be a ballot measure coming on that he's promoting so that we change the way we redistrict. Right, we put it in the hands of politicians now, and unfortunately, the politicians who have the supermajority of the houses, sure, they're going to want it in the hands of the politicians.
Right.
When the pragmatic way to look at it is, okay, is this the right way to do it or not? Should it be in the hands of partisan politicians? And then you end up with these wonky districts and things that
like a zigzag line. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or actually, sometimes it's even been known to happen in dirty politics where they will move the district line so the current incumbent is no longer in their own district.
That's...
Yep.
Wow. I didn't know that you could do that.
Yes, then they have. I'm like, well, I don't know how... Well, we know how to get him out of district so-and-so. We're going to move this line over here, and his house isn't in it. So then he has to go against a different...
Different. Jeez.
It happens. It happens. So these things are critical for the Mid-Valley and for Oregon. One of the races I want to talk about is the Marion County Commissioner race with Colm Willis. And we were a little concerned about that one, those of us who are rooting for Colm. So congratulations on your win. It was close. It was about 3%, I think. They finally decided that it was over. And he was
Did
running.
Did they recount him?
No, I don't think they had to.
Isn't it required if it's 3% that they need to recount it just to make sure?
I think the threshold, I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question, but I think the threshold of Marion County is much smaller than that. It's like
really?
0.5%.
Ooh.
So, and it was pretty close, 48% to 45, 48.5%.
That's pretty close. Yeah.
And running against him was Bill Burgess. So Bill's our Marion County clerk and has been for a number of elections now. And the race, a ton of money was spent, and I don't have the quote in front of me. Bill was saying, well, I was shocked and disappointed, and, of course, they sent $300,000 and we spent $20,000 kind of comment. Uh-huh. Comment was, oh, they just bought their way in, was the implication. And honestly, I was surprised it was that close. And I know I tend to be a little blunt at times, and I just want it.
That's what I like about you.
What's
though.
What yeah. To just be right out there.
Sure.
So... I'm just going to say, so Bill Burgess has a reputation of not coming to work. He has a reputation that he doesn't come to work. So Janet Carlson, she's an outgoing county commissioner, and she was saying publicly, she was retiring, right?
Yeah.
So she can say whatever she wants now. But
true.
She says, hey, if Bill Burgess gets elected, there'll only be two county commissioners because he's not going to come to work. And I heard her say that in person, in public, on more than one occasion.
How?
And yet... He gets 45, almost 46% of the vote.
Name recognition?
Yeah, and party.
Okay.
And party. We vote
but
only D's, only
if
D's.
If you don't come to work, how do you keep your job?
Well, I guess the staff carries the weight for you. And
that's a dedicated staff.
So this was my beef with the campaign. I try not to pay attention because it's too frustrating and too annoying and too nasty.
Yeah,
but the things that they were complaining about Bill Burgess, they complained that he spent, I don't know, $18,000 on travel. I'm like, really? That's the dirt you got on him? Sorry, folks, but that's nothing.
Yeah,
the man's going to national conferences for people, professionals in his field. hey, Bill, I'm going to stand up for you there. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I want him to go to national conferences to know all there is about what's going on election law, election, you know, technology and this and that. $14,000 to $16,000 and he's been there for like 8 years. Not a big deal. So it was one of those campaign things like, really, is this resonating with anyone?
Yeah.
How about he doesn't come to work? How about he moonlights?
As what?
Well, he's a pharmacist. He's a professional pharmacist by trade.
Okay.
So and these are completely, I don't know, but I hope somebody does some investigative reporting to see if these, because I'm now, yeah, I've heard it often enough to feel comfortable saying out loud that, wow, why do I keep hearing this over and over again?
Right.
But I'd really like somebody, and if it were true, why wouldn't it come out in the campaign?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't that be the campaign issue?
I would have said, hey, pick me because I'll go to work for you.
Yeah. And let's, you know, I want to be fair. I mean, I want my people to be elected, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when they say, hey, he mailed out ballots, envelopes with no ballots in it. Well, that's just human error, people. That's just human error.
Much.
It's somebody on staff who maybe worked there. It's very embarrassing, but you can't throw it. You know, you can't throw a politician under the bus or even a county clerk under the bus over something like that. But that, and I thought, well, that's the worst thing Bill Burgess is, then he's a pretty good county clerk.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
We spent a little money and we had a ballot snafu or this or that. I don't know. Anyway, Colm Willis will join the Marion County Commissioners. We haven't had him on yet, but hopefully will. I expect to have both county commissioners on in this month. I know we have Sam Brentano scheduled. I want to talk about solid waste. He has some things he wants to talk about. Sam is also a person that is not as shy of opinions. So it'll be great to have him on. He's always entertaining. And the solid waste. Now, we burn our waste.
You do?
We burn our waste in Marion County at the Brooks Burner.
Oh, we do. Okay.
We do.
Yeah. I thought you said you actually burned your waste.
In Marion County. I think it's a great model. If you have not toured the facility, you should tour the facility.
And frankly, it generates electricity.
Generates electricity.
Yep.
At least at one time, they were able to filter out, you know, metals and sell metals that were in the waste and this and that. I think it's a great model. Frankly, I'd love to see us build two or three of them and then sell the services to neighboring counties.
That's not a bad model.
It's rather than dump it into some canyon until it's full of garbage and then cover it up with dirt. Rather than put it in a barge and hope that China doesn't spill it into the ocean.
No, they'll send it back.
Okay. Anyway, a few more things on the local elections coming up after the break. Some other things that are happening in our community. You're listening to Newsmakers. If you'd like to talk about anything in the news or things that we should talk about, give us a call at 503-393-1430. This is 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Gets me in the Christmas spirit too.
Yeah, to
that's
me.
A great one.
Is that
Pentatonix?
Humphrey? Oh, Pentatonix.
Pentatonix.
They do great work, and there's a great group called Humphrey.
Humphrey?
Yeah, that does a cappella singing, and
okay.
We'll have to get them.
I'll get them up next.
All right. Hey, this is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers. We're talking about elections. Local things that matter to you and who represents us does matter, and how purple, they say, but not red and not blue, not Democrat, not Republican. The county is in general. We enumerated how many people were getting elected as Republicans, even know that they're facing a big disadvantage in the state legislature this upcoming session. So we got a little bit of both, but we have a super, super liberal city council. I'm not going to get over how that happened. So pay attention to who you're voting for, folks. Hey, there was a rally a couple weeks back, and it was in the news. It was nationwide. People, the local version of it. It was the Above the Law rally. People, you know, screaming. And it was right after Election Day. It was the Friday.
Was it on the stairs of the Capitol?
No, it was right on Commercial Street and the Marion Street Bridge. And people were...
they know where to clog up traffic.
Shouting. Yeah. They were, you know, shouting, celebrating. They're celebrating the elections and the switch in the U.S. House and this and that. And there's them pulling out this driveway, and I see the sign. It says, no one is above the law. No one's above the law.
Right.
And you'll find I am always railing against hypocrisy. And we can't just look at things through partisan glasses. So I wanted to just jump out of my car, run across the street, and I said, does that include Bill Clinton? Does it include Bill Clinton? Did you think he was above the law? Did you think it was unjust to impeach Bill Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's how I feel. And I grant you, I'm holding grudges from those days.
Just a little.
But it goes on both sides. It's going on Democrats and Republicans, where you can't judge a person's actions, his characters, his words, one way if they're a Republican or another way if they're Democrat.
Right? Should be the same.
It needs to be the same. And this is a tendency in our society, is that we're trying to protect people on our team that do wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If someone's on my team and they're a cheater, I want them off the team because they're making the team look bad. Right?
Right.
And actually, you can look back to the Oregon Duck football program and Chip Kelly, and even before Chip Kelly, if somebody was not doing what they're supposed to do, if they punched a Boise player in the face, for instance.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
Off the team.
Yep.
Done. Because we need to have character, and you are making us look bad. This is our team, and this is not what we're about. And yet, when it comes to politics, people rally around Bill Clinton, as even though he's a serial sexual predator. It's like the National Organization of Women rallied around him. I don't know, don't usually talk national stuff, but it's the same thing. And it's where that hypocrisy of, hey, our guy can do it, but your guy's an animal.
Right.
Right? Anyway, so where that's going to come up every time I see hypocrisy in terms of the left and the right.
The dictionary, that's what's under there for Brent.
And it's unfortunate. You know, I tell ladies, there absolutely has to be a role for a national organization of women. Looks after women, their women's rights, women's, issues.
But we all have the same rights, Brent. I don't understand this. You know, women's rights, they have the same rights as everyone else. And so do the blacks and the Hispanics. And everybody has the same rights.
There's a role for an advocacy group for everything except white males. That's okay.
Yeah.
But, all right, so I'm saying I don't have a beef with the role of a national organization for women. I'm all right with that. But when they stood behind Bill Clinton after he committed the most egregious, fathomable act of workplace sexual harassment.
Sure.
Oh, you just threw every woman in the workplace under the bus. You don't stand for women at all. You only stand for Democratic policy. And it was apparent. And that ever since then, I've had no respect whatsoever for the National Organization of Women because they did not stand up for women. They stood up for the Democratic president, who happened to be a white male. That's too bad. And the League of Women Voters does it as well. They claim that they're here to educate. They're nonpartisan, here to educate. And I would really love to see the last time they did not support a bill that brought more money into the state government. The last time that they said, no, don't vote for this tax increase. Right?
Yeah.
They're not there for education. And I saw it testifying at the Capitol on some issues where, actually, I think it was Measure 66 and 67, folks, in the late 2000s. And they came and testified for it.
What?
And it was clear they hadn't read it.
Right.
They didn't have any idea what it would do for a small business. Right? It was just, oh, well, this is more money to state coffers. So that brings me to the Oregon unions. In the news.
Oh, boy.
Freedom Foundation. This was a big win, Supreme Court win, in terms of fighting the powers, the political powers of the unions. So what happens in Oregon, and actually we spoke of Brian Clem earlier, a state representative, and I heard him say at an economic development meeting, basically it was the unions that got me elected, so I need to support their agenda.
Wow.
And I looked and my jaw dropped. I looked at the room and I'm like, did a politician just say that out loud? He used the phrase, you got to dance with people who brought you to the ball. And his job was to represent the vote and the public policy of the public employee union. Right. That's frightening. Anyway, so what happens is, you know, you have these public employee unions and the other unions, and they collect union dues, and they can use it for elections. They can use it for political gain. And they've got these enormous coffers of great money, and I'm sure you hear about it over the years on numerous conservative talk radio.
Right? Endlessly.
So the Supreme Court said, hey, people can opt out. They don't have to. You can't force them to be.
I remember that.
And you can't force them to contribute to things that aren't not related, you know, to their collective bargaining and this and that. And then the beef is the Freedom Foundation, who is for this. They're now looking for the unions to stop doing it right away. And the unions are saying, well, when this term is over, when this current employment contract is over, we're going to continue to collect until this and da-da-da. And so their complaint is that some people said, hey, I want to opt out, and they're not letting them opt out right away. So we will see how that bears out in months to come as it goes through the court system and what have you. It's supposed to be about, you know, pretty strong blow to the unions. And honestly, I've been saying this for a long time, and I'm not a union basher, but I do think there's way too much power of public employee unions.
Yes.
Public employee unions.
There was a time when the unions were a great thing, but now they're abusing their power. That's what I think.
So according to the Salem Reporter, we had his publisher on last week.
And our partner on our new website, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excellent. New website. We have a new website.
Yeah. KYKN.com. Check it out. It's all redesigned.
So all our wonderful podcasts will be on that?
They're all there right now.
Awesome. So KYKN.com.
Yes.
Brand new website. Partnered with?
Salem Reporter.
Salem Reporter. That's awesome. Oh, I'm going to quote them more often. This article from Salem Reporter said, thousands of workers in Oregon have asked to withdraw from the unions, according to the Freedom Foundation.
Which is their right.
Yeah. And about a fourth of those could withdraw from the unions, but would have to pay for the duration. I don't know.
Of what?
For a future date. I don't know if it had to do with, you know, their employment contract, or the current. I don't know. But Freedom Foundation knows. But that's big news. That's big news. So, unfortunately, what happens is, as we know, politics follows the money. So you have public employee unions. Everything that means more money coming to the state coffers is good for the public employee unions, right? They can pay them more. They can provide better benefits, and they can hire more. So when money comes in, so you will never going to see a tax measure that isn't supported by the public employee unions. Now, every Democrat that's been elected to the Oregon House and the Oregon Senate has received money from
the public union.
So follow the line, people. We have a state that's being run, the legislature is being run by people who are beholden to the employees of the state.
Which is a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, but not compared to the rest of us. All the rest of us that are not employees of the state and are not represented by the union and didn't contribute to those campaigns. And
yeah, not as much money as those guys.
So that's what really frightens me in terms of the public policy that affects all of our pocketbooks, all of our tax rates, not just Mid-Camp, but the whole Mid-Valley, but the whole state, is how, are we just going to follow the public policy goals of the public employee unions? And I'm a big fan of the trades, by the way, so I am going to draw a distinction between, you know, an electrician, a union electrician,
different.
A union plumber, and a public employee union.
Yeah, the total difference.
So people who are being represented and paid by the government. So, all right, sorry. We're back to the governor a little bit.
After the break.
What's that?
After the break.
Oh, after the break. We'll talk a little bit more about the governor's budget coming up after the break. This is Brent D. Hart. I'm here with Dave Bourne. We're talking local issues and local politics and some of the outfall from the election last month. You listen to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
think I'd rather listen to this for 5 minutes than listen to us talk.
Said the night wind to the little land. Do you see what I see?
Little Home Free.
What a great group. I saw them, actually, down at Sweet Home.
Really?
Yep. They were performing at the Jamboree or whatever it was. And incredible. And the gentleman that does the beatbox, makes all those percussion sounds with his mm-hmm. mouth. They're out there and saying, hey, every sound you hear is out of one of our mouths.
Right.
Yeah. It seems impossible when you're listening to them. And says, so to prove it, here's, I can't remember the gentleman's name. So he sat down and he must have done a 10-minute drum solo with his mouth. It was
that's talent right there.
I said, my son, I turned my son, my jaws dropped down, my eyes were wide. I'm like, I cannot believe he's making so many sounds so fast without an instrument.
Yeah,
they're amazing, amazingly talented. And the group is amazingly talented. They're out in the Midwest and they do a lot of covers. And I'll be sure to see them again. I know I've got a t-shirt, I've got an album, but what a great group.
You're a supporter. I get it.
Yeah. Great
acapella
group.
Groups are make it a comeback.
Truth be told, I was a singer at one time.
I was in choir in high school.
I was and I
wasn't in the a cappella choir.
I was in barbershop quartet.
I could see that.
Really tight, yeah. 4-part men's harmonies. Yeah. So I like that. And
that's why you like a cappella.
Actually, going back to Christmas songs, we had two of us, two males, two females, SATB, and we do Christmas gigs. We'd hire ourselves out for Christmas gigs. I don't know what we get, you know, 20 bucks back then or something.
Oh, wow.
But we would go and we'd go sing at your Christmas party in 4-part harmonies. And we do them all from being in choir and this and that. And that was a fun little gig. We'd go to the local theater and sing before the movie started. And
this is way back when.
Good stuff. So good. Yeah. Good.
Teens?
Way back when.
Teenager?
I was a teenager. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In high school. And I
the
formed,
youngest Brent.
And I formed my own barbershop quartet in college out of some members of the band and the glee club. So
things you didn't know about Brent.
There we go. So many things that will not be exposed. We'll trick them out a little bit of time.
The resume is long.
Enough about Brent right now. We're talking about the governor, Kate Brown, and what she plans on spending money on. Our money. What she plans on spending our money on. So we talked about the troopers. No real argument there. They're talking about doubling the number of troopers.
How many years ago was it they cut them way back?
Oh, man.
It was a long time ago.
So down. And I don't know how, you know, we talked about it when we had the police chief on. We had Chief Jerry Moore on, and he talked about the rural patrols.
Yeah, way
the county
out there.
Patrols and how you're alone.
Yeah.
And the state troopers, they're so far and few between.
They're, you know, alone.
Yeah, getting help and getting support. And then, of course, the lab that's been infamous as far as the lab being behind with the rape kits and all of those things.
What was that, 12 years they were behind? Something like that?
I don't know. But right now they're saying $8 million to fill the current vacancies.
Wow.
$8 million just to fill the open jobs. And then another $3 million fund 10 new positions. So, and here's the scary part. Seek modest gun control legislation.
Huh.
I don't know what that means. There's some talk about limiting the number of rounds could be in a firearm, which they passed in California, I understand. So we'll see how that comes out. I'll make sure to, we'll be talking about it as the legislature comes into session next year. So
it baffles my mind.
All right. So the next budget includes $875 million in proposed new and renewed taxes and fees. And penalties.
New fees and taxes.
New and renewed taxes and, penalties. $875 million.
What happened to it's my money?
And including a $2, when was that ever true? $2 per pack cigarette tax.
Isn't it already up there?
Yeah, it is.
And what is it, $5 a pack?
I don't smoke. Actually, I used to be retail and we sold cigarettes.
Yeah.
And everybody would say, well, it gets to $3, I'm going to quit. You know, and I gets to
when it got to $5, I quit.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So it's like $12 a pack now?
So some increases in taxes. I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
Education funding, construction of 2,100 affordable homes. How many do you think there'll be in Portland area?
Affordable homes?
Yeah.
Less than that.
Yeah.
There is so much construction between here and Portland. I take the back roads a lot because I like to drive my car there. and there is construction all over the place, that new homes, new condos, and the homes, by the way, 2 feet apart. Who wants to live like that? Who said this would be a good idea?
Density is a good thing, right?
No.
No.
I like to not hear my neighbors or feel their home entertainment center when they're playing a video game.
We will be talking about land use. We'll definitely be talking about land use.
I want to talk about that.
And here's the problem in Oregon. We'll get back. We'll wrap up with the rest of the governor's budget. But in Oregon, we decided in the 70s we want to contain urban sprawl. And so I wasn't here, but they created urban growth boundary. So those of us in the Marion County, Salem-Keizer, mm-hmm. there's our city limits, and then there's a different line called the urban growth boundary, and that's supposed to provide a limit to how far that city limits can stretch into, right? And it's designed to keep development inside the urban growth boundary line and to prevent us from sprawling into farmland and destroying our farmland, right? So
how is that working?
Well, you know, it was a model for a lot of states, and it depends on your point of view. So some things are working about it very well, but here's the problem. The anti-development people don't want you to build inside the urban growth boundary.
And that would be a problem.
That's Hazel's Hill. It was about 10, 12 years ago. Hazel's Hill wanted to be incorporated in the city limits, and the Thousand Friends group and people were adamant against that because mm-hmm. they didn't want this, you know, additional development. And I was like, hello? You're the people that want development in the urban growth boundary.
Right.
This exists because of your land use priorities. It's inside the urban growth boundary. If you don't let them build there, guess what? They're going to build homes out in their farmland.
Right.
Like, this makes no sense. You talk about...
There's a lot of regulations that don't make sense,
that's
Brent.
What, yeah. Dumb, well, we
they
still
don't.
Haven't got to our dumb government stories, but...
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, and this is one of those things where it is a contradiction of their own public policy. It's just like...
And they don't see it.
You have to allow it in the urban growth boundary, and you have to have rational, reasoned, measured growth and expansion of the urban growth boundary. And we'll have Mayor Clark on from Keizer.
Okay.
Interested in that. You have to have it over generations. It just doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, those people, if you want development contained in the urban growth boundary, don't fight against development inside the urban growth boundary. All right, back to, we only got a minute.
The only thing you missed right there was the gavel.
Gavel. Bam. Next, moving on. By the way, you're listening to Newsmakers. We just got a minute left, and I wanted to encourage you to both call and write in and listen to our guests coming up. We've got Commissioner Craig Pope from Polk County coming in tomorrow. Kurt Arthur. Kurt Arthur is a gentleman extraordinaire. Looking forward to have him on Friday, and some great guests next week as well. So this language right out of the governor's legal battle against the Trump administration. She set aside money for a legal battle against the Trump administration. If there's one thing I don't want our governor to spend money on, if you spend it on schools, spend it on the troopers, spend it on affordable housing, but don't sue the federal government. Goodness gracious. Okay. Anyway, that's the news coming out of the Mid-Valley. We'll talk about more and more about local topics. I'm glad you're with us. I hope you're enjoying the show. Let us know how you're liking it and what kind of things you'd like us to cover. My name is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Having a good time, and we'll look forward to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This has been Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.